Maitreya said, after hearing of his mother's uncontaminated desire for transcendental realization, the Lord thanked her within himself for her questions. And thus, his face smiling, he explained the path of the transcendentalists who are interested in self-realization. Okay, Hare Krishna. It's always bizarre. So sometimes in these big programs, you know, when we're doing these programs in auditoriums, we'll have the lights on us on the stage, and the audience will be completely blank and black. And it's the most bizarre thing, you know, talking into this black, you know, black hole there. You know, you know, it's weird. There could be a million people. People could be grimacing at you. You know, you don't know what's going on like that. It's kind of like that, I guess. Okay. So, from the perspective, of course, in this, I got a little perspective after this here, I think. Okay. Of course, we're looking at the whole Srimad Bhagavatam here. And there's 12 cantos. And, of course, the Srimad Bhagavatam is the essence of all the Vedic literatures. And the Vedas include everything knowable to man. And so the first two cantos are Krishna's lotus feet. Anybody can study those, read those, recite those. But 2-12, we shouldn't go beyond those as long as we're entrapped in gross, illicit sex. Okay. And the first canto, of course, canto is a preface. Who's speaking? Who's asking questions? Under what circumstances? What's the purpose of the book? All really set up there, so we know. Maharaj Pariksha is facing death. Sukadeva Goswami is a qualified speaker. And the Srimad Bhagavatam needs to take birth because Kali Yuga is coming. And that's the purpose of the book, to create Srimad Bhagavatam, to give an incarnation of Krishna for Kali Yuga. Okay? So then the second canto, Sukadeva Goswami actually begins to preach. And he goes through the philosophy a few times. But in the third canto, we actually come in contact with the creation of the Manu, our first Manu. And he has five children. Devahuti, Akuti, Prasuti, Uttanapada, and Priyavrata, or Dapup. And after that, all the way through the third to the seventh canto, it just follows them and their descendants. Devahuti, who we're studying now, whose son was Kapila, Akuti, who married Ruchi, Prasuti, who married Daksha, and Uttanapada, who was the father of Dhruva, and then Priyavrata, like that. So it goes on down. The eighth canto talks about the other 13 Manus. You know, so all together we get all the 14 Manus. And nine talks about our Manu. So basically 3 through 9 is all about, based upon the Manus, one after another. 10 expands out our Manu into the supreme personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, like that. And 11 goes back to the descendants of our Manu after Krishna, down to the present Kali Yuga. And 12th canto, which you probably can't see, is summary of the Bhagavatam and its glories. So it's very systematic, very well organized. There's nothing like it in the universe in terms of literature, classical literature. So right now we're starting off with Devahuti. And of course the idea is to come to Krishna, who is not an avatar, but he's avatar avatari. And to see how he is the greatest of all, greater than Ganesh, greater than Shiva, greater than Mahavishnu, greater than Lila avatars, greater even than his expansion in Dwarka. And finally, within Vrindavan, of course, the greatest is his dealings with the gopis in the Ras Lila. Okay? Specifically, third canto then, the first three chapters are how Vidura meets Uddhava. And Uddhava then sends him on to talk to Maitreya. 4 through 11, Maitreya and Vidura are talking, and Maitreya begins to describe the creation of the universe, Sarga, all coming from Mahavishnu. Then after that, he starts talking about the secondary creation, 12 to 20, the Sarga, with the Kumaras and Shiva and Manu. You know? And of course, Manu and Satrupa agree to have children, but they can't get enthusiastic about it because the gross level, the earth level, is inundated. And that brings us to the whole story of Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakasipu, digressing to the pregnancy of Diti in the evening, and then Lord Boar coming and killing them, him, and then going back again to the story of the Manus, Manu, and their children. And, of course, the first daughter we were talking about is Devahuti. So 21 through 24 is the story of Devahuti and Kardama. Then finally, he takes sannyas, and we have all this dialogue, basically 25 through 33. So nine chapters on the Kapila Bhagavatam. And we're just starting right now on 25, so she's asking her basic questions, and she gives her basic proposition that I really blew it. I joined ISKCON. I was a good Brahmacharini, and I married a real nice, you know, Sankirtan devotee. And we had so much fun in ISKCON with pretty saris and beautiful festivals and decorating the altar and cooking and going to India and joining the festivals and dancing and singing with my girlfriends and having lots of nice kids. And okay, yeah, but I really missed it because I didn't really get liberation from material existence. You know, I didn't get pure devotional service. So then Kardama tells her, don't worry, your son will give you that. So she asks him that, please give me this. You're the real source of all of this. So today's verse then is about Kapila starts to respond to her questions. And he's happy, he's smiling. Prabhupada says, Devahuti has surrendered her confession of material entanglement and her desires to gain release. This is a very, very fundamental point, no? She's surrendered at some point, because that's the whole thing. In Paradise Lost, which Prabhupada quotes a couple times, this saying is a very good description of how we got into this material world. There's one phrase: the devil rebels against. He's an archangel. He rebels against God, and the other archangels try to defend God, the throne of God. But he's driving them back. He's so powerful. So on the second day, God uses the blue lightning. And Satan didn't know that God had the blue lightning, so it's a kind of like a big surprise. He gets driven off the edge of heaven. And maybe this is Indraloka or something, you know. And they fall. And it describes all of his followers and their war machines and AK-47s and everything else are falling down like grains of sand. They keep falling. They fall down into somewhere. It's hot. The ground's always hot. There's one kind of hell like that, you know. So they're all hypnotized, intoxicated by the fall, and lying there and burning sulfur and just suffering like plants and vegetables. But Satan is so powerful, he just lifts himself up, you know, all by his own strength of will, pulls himself up. And Milton says, the biggest Norwegian pine tree would have been but a matchstick in his hand. Hey, fellow, want to buy a book? Yeah, big guy. She comes out and calls everybody else out. Beelzebub, Mammon, okay. And they built an assembly house called Pandemonium, and they got to keep, you know, shifting from one foot to the other because the ground's hot. And they have a meeting, and they come to the conclusion that all they have to do is say, hey, big guy, Allah, Jehovah, we really got confused. We're really sorry. Please forgive us. And God will let us come back to heaven. But then there's the famous line, you know, and if you want to make a lot of money, you can print this up as bumper stickers and then sell it, you know, to people. And the line is, better to reign in hell than serve in heaven. And there it is. That's the whole thing. Better to reign in hell than serve in heaven. And Jack London used that for the sea wolf even, okay? So that's it. You know, so at some point we're trying to use our potency. We're trying to use our potency to be the supreme enjoyer and the supreme, supreme proprietor. like that. I can do it. I can conquer everybody else. I can dominate all the worlds. I can enjoy all the women, liquor, and cornflakes I want to, like that. Yeah, okay. Or else we can even try and become the dearmost friend. And Arjuna was more in that Maya, right? He wanted Draupadi to be satisfied with him and tie his hair up. He wanted to protect his big brother's rights, you know? So in a lot of ways, he had this thing of, I'm the dearmost friend. Of course, that also got Jabbarat and other people too. Even Maharaj Pariksit, I think, was entangled by that. You know? So, but Arjuna surrendered, you know? He confessed, I'm not the supreme controller. I'm not the supreme proprietor, you know? I'm realizing that coming back from all this traveling. We've been on the road for 2 months, you know? And it's going, like 25 airports, I think the final thing was like that, 25 cities. Yeah. Anyway, you begin to realize that if you can actually control your 3 paces of land, it's kind of a sane ambition. I'll start off by trying to control my 3 paces of land. Okay, if I get that under control, and then, okay, whatever that expands to, none of my know, never mind, is happening. So at some point we have to drop it even. She had to toss her hands in the air and say, look, I'm not a tough girl. I can't do it. I confess that I'm entangled in Maya and I want out. Big deal. Okay. Yeah. Where's it go? Sisyas Teham Sadimam. Oh go. Pam Prapanam. Pam Prapanam. Yeah. Very, very famous point. That everything changes, you know. What's the famous verse that Ram tells Hanuman, tells everybody? Yacham prapanam, yo, yas cha shmiti something. Yeah, I always try to memorize it. From that point, when one says in all sincerity, I am your servant, I'm surrendered unto you, I give that person all protection by which he can return to me. This is my eternal vow. That's it. Okay, all protection, didami buddhi yogam tam. Yeah. Jainamamu priyantate. How they can come back to me. So she's done this. Okay. Her questions to Lord Kapila are very interesting for persons who are actually trying to get liberation from material entanglements and attain the perfectional stage of human life. So Alcoholics Anonymous, they talk a lot about this. They realize exactly what we're saying, that, you know, you can get free from this, you can do austerities, but it's always just like, you know, reaction. You know, somebody said, I have no problem stopping smoking. I've already done it 25 times. So, of course, the beginning of the Nectar of Devotion, and then Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu talks about this, you know, that there's this, what do you call it, material entanglement. And so many times, I'm sure all of us too, maybe we're not smoking, we're not engaging in lascivious relationships, but if we become angry, we fight with somebody, or we eat too much, you know, or we fall into like ladies' fashion magazines or men's sports magazines or Sherlock Holmes or, you know, something. I'll never do it again. Yeah. And we see it and we try to control it. You know? But how do we get free from this? So we don't even know the right things to ask. So she's asking really good questions. Of course, in backing up and looking at the questions, you know, they'd be very nice. Of course, I think she says at some point here, I'm a less intelligent woman. So if she's a less intelligent woman, we're all in trouble. She's a very intelligent devotee. Yeah, and her questions are incredible. Okay, very interesting for persons who are actually trying to get liberation from material entanglement and attain the perfectional stage of human life. The perfectional stage of human life is to be able to do your thing for Krishna and keep on expanding your talents and your abilities and take part in all the fun and really see how Krishna's smiling. He really is smiling. Oh, that was really nice. Wow. I didn't know you could play the violin like that. I didn't know I could play the violin like that. Yeah. unless one is interested in understanding his spiritual position or his constitutional position, and unless he also feels inconvenience in material existence, his human form of life is spoiled. One who does not care for these transcendental necessities of life and simply engages like an animal in eating, sleeping, fearing, and mating has spoiled his life. Do you like our picture there? I use the keywords dog eating. It came back with a lot of pictures of dogs eating. And we know this. If you ever have, there's actually a Graham Larson, the Far Side joke. He has nice jokes, you know, Krishna conscious stuff. And one of them shows two mountain men with their coonskin hats on, seated in a very rough cabin, eating something rough, you know. And there's a bear on the ground, full-size she-bear. And he said, yeah, I got him when she was just a cub, you know. And we had to work out a couple things before we got our relationship straight. I had to make her understand she couldn't follow me into town. And I understand that I couldn't touch her bowl when she was eating. And the guy's left hand has a hook on it instead of a hand like that, you know. So we know when a dog, the impetus of the belly, the hunger, is just overwhelming. Totally overwhelms the intelligence like that, you know. And so if we can't get free from this, then we're going to be carried by it. The subtle form of our stomach will then carry us into another stomach like that, same kind. Yeah. So we have to feel, material distress. Feels inconvenience in material existence. We have to feel inconvenience in material existence. And I forgot to do it. But there's a verse in Isha Upanishad which I wanted to pull up, which I'm using all the time. I'm citing it, so I'd like to actually get localize it a little more. And it's the one where it says that one must cultivate knowledge of both the material and spiritual existence at the same time. One must cultivate both science and nescience. That doesn't mean we're trying to become drunk and become stupid, but no, we're trying to understand the deficiencies of material nature simultaneously. We're cultivating the knowledge of the advantages of the spiritual nature. Of course, if we're going to tend to one side or the other, we should tend towards, especially towards cultivating your knowledge of how nice the spiritual world is, like that and so on. Yeah. Unless we cultivate knowledge of how bad the material world is, we'll become sahajiyas. And if we only cultivate knowledge of how bad the material world is, we'll become mayabadis. So we have to understand, you know, that burying our nose in our dog dish is not the perfection of life. Lord Kapila was very much satisfied by his mother's questions. Ah, satisfied. Good questions. Okay. Good petitions. Please help me, you know, conquer my attachment to Gulabajamam. Lord Kapila was very much satisfied by his mother's questions because the answers stimulate one's desires for liberation from the conditional life of material existence. Such questions are called apavarga vardhanam. This is the whole thing, is that I remember when I was in Prabhupada's room in Berkeley, and again I told the story about how he told a story about how everybody sees everybody else as engaged in the same suffering as they are. And so there's no impetus to get out because you think, well, I guess this is just the best you can do. You know? So that's the situation. You know? We don't have much desire for liberation. Mark Twain has a whole thing about how most people think of heaven, if they think of it at all, as a place where everybody sits up there with a robe on, with nondescript robes, sitting on a cloud, playing a harp, you know, and singing hymns. And he said, most people in this world can't even play a musical instrument, and everything else. And the thing in this world, what actually was motivates people is sex. And so people will sacrifice an enormous reputation, prestige, honor, wealth, everything for this. And you tell them there's no sex in the spiritual world. You just sit around playing a harp. And he says that kind of Christian preaching makes the devil's work very easy. Makes the devil's work very easy. You know, so there's no motivation. So these kind of questions are glorified because they apavargavardhanam. They increase, you know, the desire, you know, for liberation. So hearing the questions is very important. Someplace else, apavargavardhanam. Yeah, okay, I forgot what it is. Yeah. Okay, we're caught in jail, we don't want out. Then, those who have actual spiritual interests are called sat, or devotees. Satam prasangat. Sat means that which eternally exists, and asat means that which is not eternal. Unless one is situated on the spiritual platform, he is not sat, he is asat. So, you know, at 70 years old, it's very nice, you know, very nice being 70 years old for a devotee because it pushes us. And we realize that, you know, any moment really, you know, and within about maybe, you know, 6 more years maximum, we're going to be leaving this body. And then what happens, you know, if we have some attachment, like a bull, very big fellow, but a little ring in his nose, you can take him anywhere. So he may have acquired some spiritual assets, but little attachment and the black witch can take us right back into the material world. And so we may end up in a womb again, you know, in somebody's womb for 9 months, cramped up, being bitten by our womb brothers, little insects and worms and stuff, you know. And every time our mother smokes a cigarette, we'll be sharing cigarettes and liquor with our mother. And if she's out for a good hot Mexican meal, we'll be being burned alive. You know? So what do? I guess maybe it's a good time to catch up on your rounds or something like that. Yeah. You know? What do? If we're on the transcendental platform, then we can look at the whole thing from a little bit higher platform. But is our service really sat? Or is our service still, very much tied up with the material world and the material body? And therefore, is our service really for heavenly pleasures, for getting pleasures in this world, prestige, honor, fame? So we have to become sat. I have to become sat. We have to become situated on the spiritual platform. You know? Asat means that which is not eternal. We chose a little picture here because, you know, life is flickering like a little drop of water on a leaf. One flick and the water falls off. So any moment. Oh, did you hear? Hanuma Parashak Swami had a heart attack right during the class. his last words were, cheese pizza. Cheese pizza. Okay. What if something? What would it be? Crunchy peanut butter. Okay, yeah. Anyway, yeah. So, satam prasangat. Now, a very, very nice thing to do, you know, to develop your collection of verses and to stimulate your memory is whenever you see one show up, which is part of your memory list, from Bhakti Bhai Bhava or Bhakti Vedanta or your own collection there, look it up. So I recognize this. Satam prasangat. And it's a verse I want to refresh my memory on. I memorized it for the test and haven't forgot it. So it is 325.25. It's in this chapter. Okay, please repeat. Satam prasangam mama virya samvido.
Satam prasangam mama virya samvido.
Bhavanti hrit karna rasayanaha kataha. Taj Joshanarash Papavarga Bartmani. Shraddha Bhaktir Bhaktir Anukramishati. Satam prasanga mama virya samvido Bhavanti vidkarna rasayana kataha Najjoshana rashvapavarga varmani Shraddha ratir bhaktir anukramishati.
I got
some of it there. Need more work. Well, that's great. Okay, one second here. So this is the section. It's ahead of us here. Not but just eight verses ahead, and it's such a nice little preaching thing. Every learned man knows very well that attachment for the material is the greatest entanglement of the spirit soul. Attachment for the material is the greatest entanglement. But the same attachment, when applied to the self-realized devotees, opens the door for liberation. So there it is, attachment to the opposite sex, this, that partner we're dreaming of, you know, and his or her connection with society, friendship, love, all these things. It's the greatest attachment for the entanglement for the soul, and simultaneously attachment to a sadhu, you know, Srila Prabhupada, opens the door of liberation. The symptoms of a sadhu are that he is tolerant, merciful, and friendly to all living entities. He has no enemies. He is peaceful, and he abides by the scriptures, and all his characteristics are sublime. Such a sadhu engages in staunch devotional service to the Lord without deviation. For the sake of the Lord, he renounces all other connections as his family, relationships, and friendly acquaintances within the world. Wow. Engaged constantly in chanting and hearing about me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yeah, where's it here? The sadhus do not suffer from material miseries, because they are always filled with thoughts of my pastimes and activities. Yes. Okay. I lost it there. Okay. So anyway, number 21, of course, is Titikshava Karunika Suhidar Sarvadehinam Ajata Shatu Shantava. Something or other. Okay. Shadu Bhushanaha. Yeah, okay. Oh, my mother, oh, virtuous ladies, these are the qualities of great devotees who are free from all attachment. You must seek attachment to such holy men, for this counteracts the pernicious effects of the material attachment. So in my travels, actually our very, very last trip here, we were in Houston. I had to come back to Nashville. And I finally found my gate. I walked up there. There were two nuns seated there. And I sat down on the row back from them in the waiting lounge. And different Catholic people were coming up to them and talking to them. And then, of course, finally, of course, one of them, she talked to me. She said, "Oh, I've never met someone like you before." Like that. And I said, "A yogi?" She said, "Well, that's what you are, you know." And very serious brahmacharini. Even their voices, they weren't lusty. They were like very serious, you know, thing like that. So we started talking, and, it, you know, she was sitting there next to, in the seat next to me or something, maybe one seat away. She did that. She kept herself one seat between me and her. Full habit, black. They were poor Clares. Clarissa. No, they were Dominicans. Dominicans, like that. Yeah. And so, you know, still here I am looking into the face of a, maybe like, 35-year-old young woman, and trying to not be agitated and like Lord Chaitanya, and talk and everything else. But it was interesting because interfaith dialogue, and she knew nothing about Krishna consciousness and what's your history. I am a Christian, but I got involved in this perspective, you know, still like that, and trying to explain things to her. And of course, her thing was very much that. Now, I tried to offer her a book. She said, "I'll pass on that. I'll pass on that." It was the light of the Bhagavad. "I'll pass on that." You know. So very interesting, meeting with her and talking with her. And I was trying to put it on this platform that, you know, we have to associate with holy people, and that's the real basis of this.
Yeah.
But she was pushing it right ahead with the fact that that Jesus Christ is the one way, like that, and so on. And this stimulated me when I came back to look up the Vatican II. Vatican I was one big council where they decided who they were, and maybe 19th century or something, a long time ago. And Vatican II was in this century, and maybe 2,000 bishops were all there. They made a whole big discussion of what the church was and everything else. And that's the point when officially, and I think she's a little bit off the guidelines there, where they said that other churches and other faiths may take people to God, to Christ. And we're not opposed to Hinduism and Buddhism with their philosophical realizations. And also we realize that Judaism is our, Jews and stuff are from the same, and Muslims are from the same patrimony as we are. We totally disavow and reject all genocide and harassment of Jews and anybody else like that and so on. You know? So kind of interesting. Before it was outside the church, there's no salvation. But this one is saying within the church there is salvation, and outside we're not sure. And we're not opposed to Hinduism if it doesn't impede people from coming to Jesus Christ. So, but she was a little bit more, the church is the only way, but we didn't get a chance to talk too much. You know? But this is the point I was trying to work on, that understanding who are saintly people and at least getting association with them, and not to be just involved in your church and your ritual because that's what it is, and not really associating with saintly people. Yeah? In association of pure devotees, discussions of the pastimes and activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is very pleasing. Satam prasangat. There's a sangha. Satam prasangat. In the association of pure devotees, discussions of the pastimes and activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is very pleasing and satisfying to the ear and heart. Krit karna. By cultivating such knowledge, one gradually becomes advanced on the path of liberation, and thereafter he is freed, and his attraction becomes fixed. So mukti, nishta, what was it called? Anartanivritti, nishta, bhava. Yeah, they come. Thus consciously engaged in devotional service in the association of devotees, a person gains distaste for sense gratification, both in this world and in the next. Yeah? By constantly thinking about the activities of the Lord. This process of Krishna consciousness is the easiest process of mystic power. When one is actually situated in the path of devotional service, he is able to control the mind. Haribo. This last one I remember because this is, Prabhupada gave a class on this verse the day he signed, or the day my initiation letter was dated, initiated by letter, and this is the day. On this day, November something, Prabhupada gave this lecture, can actually control the mind. And very interesting, because from the very beginning, I felt my job was especially working in this area of Sankhya. And many people have commented that we have this, we can do this, we can explain it pretty well in the scientific terms like that. Okay. And Prabhupada continues. The asat stands on a platform which will not exist. But anyone who stands on the spiritual platform will exist eternally. As spirit soul, everyone exists eternally. But the asat has accepted the material world as his shelter, and therefore he is full of anxiety. So even in devotional service, we have our asat devotional face, asat devotional gender, varnashram characteristics, our asat language. Yeah. So even these, we can't depend on these. We can use them temporarily. We can use all this stuff. But as long as that we're identifying like this in varying degrees, then it's all going to, we're going to fall, you know. And so we have to get it together and rise above this. Asad Grahan, the incompatible situation of the spirit soul who has the false idea of enjoying matter is the cause of the souls being asat. Yeah. I remember one time I was walking up towards a temple in Berkeley, and somebody asked me, what do you like more, two-door cars or four-door cars? And right away, my mind was thinking, well, which do I enjoy more, two-door cars or four-door cars? And suddenly, my intelligence said, you don't like either one. And I was realizing, yeah, I don't like either one. I don't like cars. We're always being confronted with situations which have nothing to do with us. That's the whole material world. Sometimes in the mode of goodness, we're confronted with a reflection of the spiritual world, which has something to do with us. But pretty much this whole world is bound up in ignorance and passion. So we're being confronted continually with situations which are just downright stupid, dull, you know. Or else we'll be confronted with options which are tempting us, which are just superficial temptations which don't actually touch us. Yeah. So this is what keeps us in the material world. The false idea of enjoying matter. Actually, the spirit soul is not asat. As soon as one is conscious of this fact, yeah, where is it? And takes to Krishna consciousness, he becomes sat. Satam gatahi. The path of the eternal is very interesting to persons who are after liberation. Yeah, not the goal, but the path. The path itself is very interesting. It produces interest on your investment. So we should be interested in the path as much as we are in the goal. And his lordship, Kapila, began to speak about that path. Okay. So, Prabhupada ki jai, param vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. So, any comments or questions about for her?
His I have a question. I have a question. Question from the audience.
Okay.
Maharaj, you mentioned that the different parts of the Bhagavatam and describe a little bit of what happens where. You mentioned that in the second canto of the Bhagavatam is when the Sukadeva Goswami begins to answer questions. Now, I know a good handful of verses, but most of them I don't really remember exactly their number or where they are. But there are a few that I do know, and one of them is the very first verse of the second canto, the very first thing that comes out of Sukadeva Goswami's mouth in that regard when he starts answering the questions, and that is that famous verse, Varyan Esha Te Prashna Krito Loki Hitam Nirpa Atmavit Samatakum Sam Shota Vyadishu Yakparaha, where he glorifies the question, he expresses his great pleasure in hearing the question, and at the same time is encouraging his disciple, King Parikit, because he's asked such a great question. But here we find that Kapila, it says that he thanked her within himself. I'm not sitting at my computer, but something about he thanked her within himself for the questions. I think it said he smiled or something. Oh, why do you think he just sort of, in a reserved way, just appreciated within himself rather than expressing? I know whenever someone, when I'm preaching and some, especially a new person, asks a question, I always like to sort of encourage them and thank them. Wow, what a great question. What an excellent question. Thank you for asking that. It's kind of interesting here that he just sort of within himself. Any thoughts on that?
Again, I don't know the exact sentiment because, again, it could be so many things like the smile might have been enough. You know, because of their particular personal relationship of mother and son in that particular situation like that, that might have been like the best thing, you know. Here it is. Okay, I got it on the screen here. It says that she 12. Okay, the yoga system of mind. I shall now explain to you the stages of consciousness. One is configured at time and that position. Direction every other man knows. My mother, Lord Bush, these are the qualities and association of devotees as consciously not engaging on hearing. Okay, yeah. So it doesn't say, like you said, that she giving, but he reciprocated. That's all I can think of. Maybe the smile was just the right thing. Mm-hmm. All it needed. Maybe she wasn't as advanced as far as Parikshit, and so, you know, or something like that, you know. So I don't know. No more thought.
You know, a smile says an awful lot. In fact, we know that Krishna can, just by Krishna's, you know, by Krishna's smile, he can steal our hearts. Yeah, a smile says an awful lot, as does a frown. It's amazing how we can, by our body language, we can communicate. And the mouth, whether it's smiling or frowning, is very, very powerful.
It was interesting because I was talking to this lady. I was talking about Franciscans, the nun, and Dominicans. And she brought the point up in the discussion that St. Dominic said we should pray with our whole body. And I was mentioning dancing, and she was kind of nodding, yes, yeah, yeah. But it has to come to that, the whole body should pray, you know.
Yeah. Maharaj, do you see in the chat?
There's a lot of chat. Chat,
if you'd like to ask a question.
Chat is chat without the end. I have a question and a comment, says Chandramukhi. Okay, that's what you mean? Or is it earlier?
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj.
Hare Krishna, Chandramukhi Devi Dasi.
Oh, Guru Srila Prabhupada, thank you very much for the class. I always have this, like, kind of doubt in my heart, because you said always that, Krishna is our well-wisher, best friend, and we are not the best friends of anybody, but so how can we act, to be like empathic? Sometimes I just want to help everybody, you know, because someone is like in distress, especially women, I don't know, I want to help them, but how to keep in mind that I am not her best well-wisher? That's one doubt that I have. And the comment
At first. I would say, of course, every situation is different. Every person is different. But I think one of the things is that there's no problem trying to be everybody's best friend. That's actually, we want to do that. But we realize that it's just like, you know, if you're an ambulance attendant, okay, and your ambulance pulls up and there's a wreck, and you want to help everybody medically and stuff like that and so on, but you realize that the thing is not to try and, you know, cure the disease right there, but it's to get people stable so they can make it to the hospital. And once they get to the hospital, there's a doctor, and he has all these surgical instruments. He has his team. They can do all this kind of stuff. So that's it. We realize our position and realize, the most help I can do is to get people, you know, like you have a dog, Ulysses, okay? So you get hit by a car, and the car keeps going. And what does Ulysses do? He doesn't try and, like, you know, revive you. And he just starts barking his head off. And he realizes that, and people come out, what is this? You know, even the dog can be everybody's best friend. And he knows, you know, I got to get some superior help. You know? So in that position, then we can really just throw ourselves into it and try and help everybody. You know? The problem is when we want the credit. Okay. Maybe our fair share of the credit, because it's necessary. We did 1% of the work, so we need that. So next time that we can go on with and do our service. Now, I'm an ambulance attendant. Oh, I recognize that. Okay, yeah. So is that okay?
Yeah. Now it's okay. Guru Maharaj, you were saying about the two nuns that you met at the airport, and I was like kind of. Yes, for that, you know, we were like having a walk, and then I was hurt. So I talked to her, can we enter there? And she was like kind of shocking because she says that I'm like fanatic, you know. But we entered, and the ambience was really nice, you know. And we found a little Jesus that looked like Gopal, you know. And even they put candies and toys inside them. So I was wondering, well, they told us that we were like, worship idols, you know, but they are doing like, they are dressing them, they are like feeding them and this way. And so I found like some similarities, you know, so maybe someday they can appreciate our deities. It was really nice. It was like, the boy was really nice. Yeah. I just sent a letter to the blog and I just shared that picture.
Are you a Christian? Do you believe in Jesus Christ?
Yes, of course, yes.
Yeah. Same thing. Somebody asked, we had an interfaith dialogue as soon as I came back, and they were saying, okay, today we have no Christians here because it was Baha'i, two Jewish people, Nirakari, the impersonalists, and ourselves. And I said, I'm a Christian. she smiled. Because, yeah, I've never... anyway, diminished, you know, my Christianity. That's the whole thing in spiritual life. You're only looking for things that will increase it. And one fundamental reason why I took shelter of Srila Prabhupada is because I realized he's the best Christian I ever met. And I never had met a better Christian than A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, you know. So there are how many of the devotees in ISKCON are Christians or nuns? And some of them, they're taking their vows. Okay, two nuns actually came to the temple up in Canada, I guess it was Montreal. They talked to Bhakti Marga Swami. They had full uniforms on, and they were there for a French nuns convention. They were chanting 16 rounds a day, and of course following the four principles. And I think they even initiated that thing, you know. But they didn't leave their positions and their order and so on. You know? So, you know, there's a lot of people have already done it. But like you say, it's very interesting because how much are we going to match up with them? How much are we going to connect? And again, different people are on different levels and so, in different positions and so on. So they may not, you know, all become initiated ISKCON devotees. But a lot of nice things like you're talking about, you know, appreciation of worship of icons. Of course, the Jehovah's Witnesses are really against it. They're really against even having a church in the meeting hall. But other places like Catholics, you're talking about, they can very much appreciate, you know, the form and the same thing, the bread and the wine. Does it become the body and blood of Christ, or does it become just a symbol of the body and blood of Christ? So a lot of interfaith dialogue is a really incredible area for preaching, and then even publishing new books. Taking things from Prabhupada's books and putting them together like that.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you.
Thank you very much, Guru Maharaj.
Yeah.
Maharaj, you know, the presentation that you did at the beginning with listing the different cantos and even the chapters and especially how the manus, you know, we talked about the different manus and like that whole breakup. Could you send us your PowerPoint so we can post it? Because that was very interesting.
Oh, I've done it before many times. I've noticed that six times you make it present a new idea, you better take it six times before people will really understand it.
Is that right? Really?
Yeah, the first time people don't even really notice you said it. The second time they notice you said it, that's about all they get. The third time they begin to actually notice it and understand it. The fourth time they actually understand it, the fifth time they decide they got to maybe do something about it, and the sixth time they actually do something. Anyway, if we go here to my online, I'm online, okay. You go to my webpage.
Okay.
Where it is, Jayarama.
I do have a link for that on every one of your lectures.
Okay.
Sometimes it's a little hard to find stuff on there. There's so much stuff.
Hey, yeah, this is inauguration. you can go directly to it, or also said, the library is the heart of the institution. Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada said, volume 1137, page 267. Okay. And we got pictures of libraries here. Okay. I like these. It's fun. Yeah. Yeah. Things are a little disorganized here, okay? We're confessing. But if you look for them, you might find something you need. If you click on the following link, it will give you a list and links to all the archive files. Okay, here I give some explanation how these things are grouped. American Bhagavad Curriculum, Anjali Sudha Academy. Okay, what else we got here? H.E.D. Japa Lalita, Light of the Bhagavad. Then we got Padapadma. So there it is. This is the first two cantos.
Okay.
PDP-1-2 canto summary. These are all the PDP files are for our seminar on the first two cantos. So this first one is a summary of the first two cantos. This one is a summary of canto 1 through 12. This one, I don't know what it is. Okay. Then we got chapter study guides, which I think is updated. It may be the Doc X also, if you look in there. You know, these are all doc files, doc X. And those are the, where you actually include the, what do you call it, all the, anyway, a lot of PowerPoint shows. So I think you go to PDP, the Peru flute. Nice flute. Yeah. There's a lot of weird stuff in the archives. I got Winston Churchill's hate letter about India in there. And one time I went to class one Wednesday night in San Jose Temple, and Vaisheshika came in. He looked at me, he was smiling, and he was kind of joking. He says, I got a bone to pick with you. You know, well, I'm sorry, what is it? They said, I found your archives last night. He said, I was up to 11 o'clock at night going through everything. You know? So, I mean, there's stuff that even I don't know. Yeah. Okay. Disneyland. Why not? Yeah. Whatever. Okay.
I had a comment.
Okay.
I also have experience with what Mataji was saying about, you know, feeling you're like the best friend or wanting to be the best friend of somebody. Yeah, I find it really a trap. It's like if somebody says, you're my best friend, and if you believe them, or if you try and be like, oh, yeah, I'm just so magnanimous, I want to help people. I found that every time it's a trap. It's like getting stuck in a cobweb. And maybe, I don't know how to deal with it, but every time I think like that, boy, it has terrible results. So I found that in my devotional career, if I really, really don't think, you know, like I want to be this person's best friend, you know, just if you want to help the other person, that's the mentality that I found that really helps me. But to think that I want to be like the best friend of this person, I want them to think like that of me.
That's what got Adam. Adam and Eve, you know that story, right?
Let's see, Adam and Eve, who are they?
The idea was that Eve tempted Adam into eating the apple, so he could get whatever he got. But he knew it was wrong. His thought was, oh my God, now Eve's going to have to leave the Garden of Eden. You have to go work and get a job at McDonald's or something, or Wendy's, you know. So she'll be all alone. Okay, I'm going to eat the apple because I'll be forced to leave them too, and I can be her best friend, and take care of her. So identical thing. That third one is it looks like a nice thing. You know? So yeah, but if thinking, yeah, but I can take this person to Krishna. Yeah, then I can be everybody's best friend because I can take them to Krishna. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And what do I need? What do I need best friends for? I've already got a best friend, just like you, Krishna. Okay, this is in our archives. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Maharaj, do you think that eating the apple is somehow analogous to, within our philosophy, the desire to enjoy independently of Krishna?
It says it was the knowledge of good and evil. It says, that's all I know. It says the apple, the snake told her, you'll be like God if you do this. because then you can distinguish. That it doesn't go into much more detail, I don't think, but it says that that knowledge was the knowledge of good and evil. And I guess, you know, discriminating good and evil for your benefit. Yeah. So get knowledge. Yeah. Even William Blake, he has a poem. It's really interesting. He's a weird guy, you know. It's called When Falling Souls Take to Blazing Light. Yeah. And we fall down and we start to see things and know things and understand things. And that's the first thing, you know. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Somebody, people on this level, even, what's her name? Joan Baez has a song, Diamonds and Rust, one of the super classics of all time. It was about her relationship with Bob Dylan, but it's really archetypal, you know, about, you know, I need some vagueness here. You know, things are coming back too sharp like that, you know. So at a certain point when this material knowledge becomes too sharp, and that's when it catches us. Yeah. You get too close to it. You know too much. Yeah.
It sounds like a good thing to be able to discriminate good and evil.
But that's the whole purpose of why you're discriminating it. If you're discriminating, this is good because I can get that. This is bad because, well, that's evil for me. You know? So I think that's what the thing was. Other
I
than
see.
That, we're just thinking about God and, you know, what's good and bad for him. Yeah. For baby Krishna. Yeah, I have a real suspicion this boy is almost no nun in the history of the universe who's ever made it without taking Jesus Christ as her baby. maybe some of them really staunch impersonalists beyond belief, you know. But in most cases, I would say it's almost impossible, you know, that they've made it without having that, you know, mother. Even get a ring, right? They get a wedding ring, and then it's not taking Jesus Christ as your baby. It's taking Jesus Christ as your husband. Yeah. They get married to Jesus. Yeah. Okay. Okay, so anyway, here's Father Brown. Anyway, our archives, and like I say, my voice, you can tell. I don't know if it's ever going to recover now. We took off June 1st. We went to Boise, San Jose, Seattle, Houston, Mexico, Lima, Santiago, Lima, La Paz, Cochabamba, Lima, Mexico, Houston, back again. And incredible programs with the big, big poets and people like that. And now, after all this stuff's going over, my body is about to collapse. I guess it's going to recover, maybe. Maybe not. But I think now, as we're trying to do, and everybody please get involved, maybe make an application for $125,000 for a big movie on art and the sacred, and involve everybody, all the people we've met, and do a really, really good thing on what is art, what is the sacred, you know, and how art can take us to that point. And of course, we could weave the pictures of the deities through the whole thing like that, and so many nice things. So we're really happy to be back, and this is one of our nice points in our whole week, is this Sangha like that. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Maharaj. We'll see you next week.
Maybe before, hopefully before that, I'll be online here. Yeah. I like to come to every class. Okay.
Otherwise, we have you for 6 weeks.
Thank you.
Mid-September?
Until September 27th. So I guess
if it should work
out, we can. It'll be every Thursday. Every Thursday in Hawaii.
Jai, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Gurudev.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.